PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week, once again, although it's been a while, is my good buddy Chris Voschal. You know him from Mizuno Golf. He's a fairly well-known, very important guy over there. Vosh, welcome back.
Thank you. Your level of importance on people is getting pushed down too low. So I'm just a dude who happens to talk clubs a lot.
Well, you say that, but the THP community, like, you're kind of the guy. So we always get excited to have you on. You always bring some interesting points of to the conversation. So yeah, definitely excited to have you on. You guys have a lot going on right now. Some product that's fairly new to the the market. I'm sure we're going to see some new stuff as it always goes as the year progresses. But what's going on over at Mizuno right now?
Yeah, I feel like Mizuno is in a really, really good spot right now. I feel like we're getting accepted, getting trial, and winning a lot of battles, like, on all fronts. So if you look at kind of, again, I'll put the business hat on a little bit, all the market share numbers and stuff are higher than we've ever been. So we're doing a lot of good things on the iron side. We've got the JPX line firing strong in its second year. We launched the Mizuno Pro stuff, the 2-4 family, earlier this year. 2-4-1, 2-4-3, 2-4-5. Phenomenal set of clubs that are really outperforming their looks, is almost how I like to describe it. The wedges, we added another finish to the T24 line. We've got the Amoe line of putters. And then the woods. To me, the woods are one of the more exciting things. Just our full family of the ST230, adding the Max to the lineup to really round everything out. We have the best offerings that we've ever had. And I feel like it's starting to pay dividends. So I love it.
So I'll ask what is probably a weird question for you, being that you're there and you know the performance level. But Mizuno's always been, from a consumer's perspective, at least the people I talk to, it's like, I want Mizuno irons in my bag. Mm-hmm. It's very clearly, I want Mizuno irons in my bag. And I'm like, hey, do you want to hit this driver? They're like, no, you didn't hear me. I want the Mizuno irons in my bag. So I'd love to know, perspective-wise, is the conversation shifting a little bit to where it's not necessarily the featured focus when you engage with consumers of, hey, we want to hit your irons? Now it's like, hey, we want to hit everything because it's all very interesting to me.
Yeah, I think it's the Mizuno customer is a particular person. And we all kind of joke around. I've seen some things on Instagram of guys saying, I'm a Mizuno guy. And like, here's all the things that make you a Mizuno guy. And one of the things I feel like is a characteristic of a Mizuno guy is they're looking for the best in every little bit. And we're that selection on irons. We've been that selection on irons for a long time. And it's almost like the Mizuno guy, I'm going to name other competitors, the Mizuno guy has a Titleist driver and a Scotty Cameron putter and a Vokey wedge or something. Like, it's almost like you can predict what a Mizuno guy will have. And that's funny because we're Mizuno. Like, we make all of these things too. So you say you're a Mizuno guy because you're a Mizuno iron guy. But I think what's been really cool over the last little bit, and honestly, like, you hate to go back and like keep talking about COVID and new players and all these things that have changed within the game. But to me, one of the most exciting things that's happened over the last little bit is with the new people coming to the game, with launch monitors, TrackMan, Foresight, all this like data driven analytics, it's opened up eyes to people to different categories within our brand beyond just irons. So it's become like that Mizuno guy doesn't just automatically pick that driver. That Mizuno guy picks the driver that works best for them. So now it's now that data proves everything. It's like you don't have to rely on reputation of, oh, well, I don't know Mizuno's drivers, I'm going to try something else. Now just put it in the mix and whatever shakes out wins. And when younger players are coming to the game, it's like younger players, it's like, I don't care what it says on the bottom. I just want the one that performs the best. And when it comes to performance and dialing in technology and stuff like that, I feel like we do as good a job, if not better job, than anybody out there. And so a lot of our new products are so, so good. If you just get them in your hands and test them out, gather some numbers on them.
So that takes us potentially down a really interesting rabbit hole, because I remember at the start of the year, it might not even have been this year. It was shortly after the 2-4 series dropped on the irons, of course, I'm absolutely going to go and hit them as soon as I can. And I walked through the lineup personally. I hit 2-4-5 first because, you know, everyone loves that product line. It's been a really fun progression. And then I sort of walked through the lineup going down to 2-4-3 and then down to the scariest one, which is 2-4-1. And by scary, I mean you better hit it well when you hit it. So, of course, my instant feedback is how well did I hit them? So that's my perspective on the iron. But the other side of the coin is, and I'm going to try and expand this to every golfer out there, is there a challenge when you get a new lineup and someone says, maybe they missed JPX, but they're like, man, that new Mizuno MP series or whatever you want to call it, 2-4 series, that's the one I want to go hit. In reality, a lot of golfers should be in the JPX lineup. Mm-hmm. So do you struggle a little bit where people don't give JPX a chance and they isolate purely onto your sort of pro lineup and then make their decisions based on that? Yeah.
Totally. I think, you know, there's so much of an ego in golf of like the aesthetics. I want it to look a certain way and kind of start to ignore some numbers and just kind of get driven down a path. And that's where I think from a golf club manufacturer side, our job, like to me on our marketing and stuff like that and what we put out, our number one goal of everything we're doing isn't to say, buy this particular iron or buy this particular wedge. Our number one goal in everything we do is get you to a fitting cart. Like that's our whole analytics. Like it's so funny where when we're talking about like measuring website traffic, our key analytic to website traffic is how many people clicked on find a fitter or find a retailer. Like that's our number one thing that we want to drive you to, because by going to that fit cart, that's where people who thought they wanted 2-4-5 might end up in Hot Metal Pro or Hot Metal guys might end up in High Launch. The fit cart is the equalizer with all of it. So to me, if we can drive you to that fit cart, then we've done our job. Because you're right, it's so easy to say, well, I've always played, you know, this shallow cavity iron. I know what I want. I'm going to get this one. I'll try a shaft in it. I might switch those around, but I know what head I want. But these new heads do so many different things, and I think people get shocked when they look at some of the quote unquote game improvement or distance clubs. People get shocked at how good they look at a dress and how good they feel as well. So again, like I said, if we can get you to the fit cart, we can overcome a lot of, I wouldn't say objections, but we can open people's eyes to things that they weren't even looking at.
So I'll take the adventure now because you're dropping some good heat. So I'm gonna sort of challenge myself, but I also have friends, and this is something I see a lot of times when I go around my golf course, is the one thing that seems to really stay consistent in a lot of bags is the set of irons, and especially the older series of Mizuno irons. I can't tell you how many times I've looked in a bag and seen like an old set of MP60s, or you know, something that has withstood the test of time, and this guy's, you know, can't seem to get to a fit cart, as you said.
Right.
So I think it's interesting because I put the 2-2-1s and the 2-2-5s, which were the set I played for a long time, in the bag over the weekend. And I have a playing partner who plays an older series of Mizuno blades. And I spent the whole weekend trying to convince him to, and I should say, I've been bugging him about, hey, maybe you should look at the new Mizuno irons. They look amazing. And meanwhile, I'm not obviously doing that myself. So I'm a bit of a hypocrite there, but, what I'd love to know is, what is it like making that transition? And at least from, let's say, the last series into the latest series, we know there have been some subtle refinements, but how do you convince a player that there is a gain to going to the newer series from a Mizuno iron they previously loved that was built maybe in the last 5 years?
Well, it's funny. I can kind of speak to my journey and what my bag has done, because I think it speaks to a lot of what Mizuno players and what a lot of players go through, in that I was always a player who had, like, I've never been a blade guy, but I've never been a big club guy either. Like, I've always played a shallow cavity forging. Like, that's just what I played. It's funny, if you look back here, I've got, like, back here in this bag, I have all my six irons of the last number of sets I've played, and it's MP57, MP60, MP58, MP59, MP62, MP64, JPX 900 Tour, 921 Tour, 923 Tour. Like, it's literally, it's They're all versions of essentially the same club. So I tell that story to get to the point of when Mizuno Pro, the last generation came out, the 2-2 series, 2-4-1, 2-4-3, 2-4-5. I naturally was like, well, I'm a 2-4-3 guy. I know that's what I am. That's the next in line of everything I've always played. So when I went to, that's even before like going out and doing full testing, I got a set built up to my specs. I didn't go to the fit card. I literally just said, I know what I want. I want those. So I got those and I tried them and I loved them. They were great. The 2-2-3 family was really, really good. And then it was interesting because when I got to the long iron side, I was like, let me try a 2-4-5 in like the longest iron because why not? Like I used to play H5s back in the day, like in the long iron. So let me try a hollow longer iron just to get a little bit more launch out of the five. So it was really good. And then I built a 6. And then I built a 7. And then I built an 8. And it was literally, it was like that. It was like a stick at a time as I started to recognize that it's, okay, now I'm seeing that this is doing something a little bit different and it still looked really good. Like the 2-5, the 2-2-5 was not big. And what really shocked me when I got to the scoring irons, the pitching wedge and gap wedge, almost impossible to tell the difference between the 2-2-3 and the 2-2-5. At address, they were virtually identical. So then I got to the point where for the rest of the season, I played for the majority of last season, I played a full bag of 2-2-5s, which again, that's not a set I've ever played or I've ever worked my way into. All that to say, 2-4 family drops. So I'm like, all right, now I'm a hollow body guy. Like that's just what I play. So the first thing I did is I built up, I didn't go full set this time. I built up a couple of clubs, a 4-6-8 of the 2-4-5. Hit them great. They went even farther than the last generation. They went even higher than the last generation, which to me, that actually scared me a little bit because I'm a high ball hitter. Like I don't struggle to get the ball in the air. I don't do it with a lot of spin, but I do it with a lot of launch. And they were just launching a bit too high for me. So then I built up a couple 2-4-3s. And they just brought it right back down, but the distance didn't drop off at all. So it's like my family, like my bag has changed throughout a couple of years where I went from this end of the spectrum to this end of the spectrum. Now I'm right here in the middle with the 2-4-3. So all that to say, like, again, I'm fortunate enough and blessed enough to have the access to try all of them at once. Like I can build myself up a $2,000 set of golf clubs like it's nothing. So I'm very lucky in that aspect. But by experimenting and everything, by essentially getting to that fit cart, you might find something that you didn't realize is going to work for you. So to all those people who are stuck in, well, I play this when I'm going to stick with it forever. It does what I want it to do. Try something because you might unlock something you didn't even know you had.
I think it's a perfect time to showcase here the comparisons between and we're flexing a little bit on video. So for those listening on, we have images of the 2-4 series lined up side by side. One of the first things I noticed, Vosh, and maybe it's just my head, but when I hit 2-4-5 and I put it at address, I'm like, this looks so compact and so clean. Mm-hmm. You must have made notable refinements to that head shape, didn't you?
We did, yeah. And okay. In the 2-4-3 and the 2-4-5. The number one thing we did on all of those, I won't say the number one thing, but one of the major aesthetic things we did with them is we made them all smaller. Like we knew we had so much performance out of it. And in the 2-4-5 family in particular, if you're looking at the screen on the far right side, the 2-4-5 family, we increased the amount of tungsten we were using inside that hollow body construction. So when you increase that tungsten, you're able to shrink the actual head in terms of toe heel direction and still not lose or sacrifice moment of inertia and forgiveness and launch. So to me, it's like the easiest thing as an engineer to make a golf club more forgiving or whatever is just make it bigger. Mizuno, we're always trying to, how can we make it smaller? That's our goal, is to make it smaller and look better. So you're right. The 2-4-5 family looks even smaller than the 2-2-5 family. Yet it goes higher, goes farther, and is more forgiving. Like that's like the ultimate of, you engineered it better. You didn't just make it bigger.
Right. Well, the sick part for me was like I pulled that 2-4-5 and I hit it, and I was just like hitting my window over and over again. I'm like, I still have two irons to hit on this lineup, but I really don't want to. I want to just keep hitting this, which is really fun. But you know, moving back into the conversation of combo sets, I would say based on this photo alone, it's pretty clear that you're open to the idea at Mizuno that people want to do that, and there is definitely a gain to it. What would you recommend for golfers who go to try and experience that? What would you say the gapping makes the most sense, and how would you apply the three irons in the lineup to that? Do you need all three to gap or no?
Yeah, that is so player dependent, and that's why. And this honestly, it goes back from the engineering side. This goes back to, I'd say, the first family that we really, really focused on combos was MP18. MP20 followed along, Mizuno Pro 2.2 and now 2.4 all follow along the same concept of get the lofts to line up properly, and then the offsets will line up properly as well. The clubs aren't designed in a silo. They aren't designed completely independently. They're designed as part of an overarching family. What I mean by that is, yes, the 2.45s are the strongest of the bunch. The 2.41s are the weakest of the bunch. The 2.43 in the middle. But all of them are designed and spec'd out so that you can tweak the lofts to make them all combo together. I'd say it's not super common that we see somebody going all three families in one combo set, but it's very common to see at least two families. And that could be 2.41 to 2.45, 2.41 to 2.43, even 2.43 to 2.45. You see all of it. And to me, the big thing I always try to talk to is, where do you split your set? To me, it turns into a conversation of, where are you trying to hit a green versus like work the ball into a green? And that's kind of how I try to like break my setup. So it's like, you know, if I'm somebody who with a 6-iron in hand, my goal is just middle of the green, don't do anything funky, just don't screw it up, then I want the 6-iron to be in the most forgiving. If I'm somebody who's trying to hit that, you know, low draw 6-iron to a back left pin, then you probably go for the little bit more demanding one on that and then make the break on either the 5 or the 4 or something like that. So to me, it's a conversation with your fitter. It's a conversation with yourself. And honestly, like, I think a lot of people probably lie to themselves in that, but think about how you're going to score better. Cause you know, if you're 190 to a front right pin over water, like, are you happy just to get it on that green? And if the answer is yes, you want the more forgiving one right there.
I think so. You said JPX, yeah.
Right. So it's have an honest conversation with yourself of how do you split them and right. How do you combine them. So to me, that's what's cool is they're not, it's not cookie cutter in that you take a 6 from this and a 7 from this and put them together. Like, we don't try to make it like that. We want it so that one player might stop at an 8-iron, one player might stop at a 5-iron. And in either instance, it works. Like, those sets work and the sets flow. So to me, that's one of the greatest things about designing as a family versus designing as individual clubs.
Awesome. Do you hear a lot of feedback from the folks who purchase or the folks who go get fit saying, hey man, I really expected to be in 2.41 and then shifting to whatever this club is at some point in the bag. And I actually went all the way with that club and left 2.41 in the cart because it's so dynamic in its different stages of the set.
Totally. I'll joke and kind of say that the Mizuno Pro line brings people to the cart, and the JPX line, the hot metal line in particular, like, gets people out of the cart. Like, that's kind of what so many people walk away with. I'll say the player's distance category is so, I don't want to say oversaturated, but there's so many different options and so many different things that people are looking for in that category that our JPX 923 Forge, our Mizuno Pro 2.45, our Hot Metal Pro, and our Mizuno Pro 2.43, they're really four different takes on one category of golf clubs. Like, they all kind of fit the bill of, they look a little bit more players, but they go a little bit farther. There's COR built into them. So it's amazing how often someone will come in saying, I wanted 2.43, I ended up with 2.45. I wanted, you know, 2.45, I ended up with Hot Metal Pro or something like that. Like, it happens all the time. And to me, that's why I say our job is to get you to the fit cart. Our job isn't to say, oh man, I am locked in on 2.45. That's all I want. I don't want to try anything else. Because ultimately, it's the numbers are going to dictate what works best for you. And those all have different spin characters and launch characters to them. So even though they're in the same family, they do different things. And that's why it's okay as a golf club manufacturer to have overlap in your lineup and for it to look a little bit intimidating, a little bit confusing. When you go to the cart and open it up and you see, you know, 30 different heads in there to try, it's because of a skilled fitter with a shaft optimizer in their hand and looking at numbers can decode the differences between this spins 200 RPM more, this launches half a degree lower. All those little things matter when you're trying to score.
Well, let me try and prod you a little bit here and see if we can get a nugget. So it's we've seen lots of beautiful things at a 241, 243, 245, and we know in that release, and we know how long it's been since a JPX release. What does the future hold for Mizuno irons? Is there going to be something new this year?
We are on a, I don't want to say predictable, but I'd say a reliable cadence right now. If you look at our launch cycles, the 923 family is, you know, midway through its second year. It's still performing great. Honestly, the market share on it is still really, really high. And we're selling a lot of hot metals. But we are approaching a time when we've got other stuff in the works. I'll say that there's a THP event coming up later on this year, and it might be focused around something that leads to what you're talking to. I can't really share too much information, but we're always working on the next latest and greatest. All that to say, you know, we're never the company who breaks it all down and says everything we made was trash until you try this new one. We're improving on what we've been doing, and I think you will see something from us later in the year that will be eye-opening. It'll be really cool.
I accept that walk around the honest answer, which we all know is coming, but you never know. You got to not live on camera. Maybe I had to bleep some of that out. This might be the second take. You guys don't know, but either way, I tried. That's really exciting because every time a JPX line comes out, it seems like you get a little bit more excited about it. So the expectation that you're going to continue to evolve that product should excite golfers. I mean, I've seen many players put them in the bag and say, these are the craziest things I've ever hit. They feel like, you know, a forged blade, but they launch like I'm actually good at golf. So it's a really funny mix. So I'm going to be a little bit selfish here in the heart of the episode because one of my favorite clubs over the last couple of years was the Fly High. I've had the two and the three in the bag with, I'll call them Frankenshafts, for quite a while.
Right.
I've not had the chance to hit the newest lineup. So can you just give me a little bit of an idea of how much I'll gain from switching to the newer product?
Sure. Yeah. From the 2-2 family, that was the first time we did this Fly High as a standalone part. You know, for the longest time, you go way back in the day, we had Fly Highs that were, you know, long irons, driving irons with a 370, hybrid shaft in them. For a number of years, we kind of went away from that and went towards more of what we call this is going to be a very Mizuno-y term, our DLRs, our direct long iron replacements, where, like I talked about my H5s earlier. H5 was a set of irons that basically it housed our driving iron within it. The hindrance to that is that they were designed to receive an iron shaft versus a hybrid shaft. So it wasn't a 370 tip. So, you know, they were designed just to whatever you have in your pitching wedge is the same shaft you have in your longest iron. With the last family, with the Mizuno Pro 2-2, we split it out. And that's because the 225 was such a good iron. Like, that's in there. But we saw an opportunity to make something a little bit longer in length, a little bit longer in toe heel direction, and something that holds a higher kicking hybrid shaft in it as well. Just because what players use as their longest iron, it really varies. You know, some players opt for their longest iron to be 10 yards longer than the iron before it. Like, you know, my 4-iron, 10 yards longer than my 5-iron. And then after that, I go to wherever. But a lot of players are opting for a club like this to be a go-between of a fairway wood and an iron. So you don't need, you're not looking backwards to connect this dot. You're looking to connect a dot between two larger spaces and gapping. So with the 2-2 family, that Fly High, it was a miraging steel face with a lot of tungsten in it and that hybrid shaft, and that black head allowed us to make it a little bit larger. the newer version of it, the 2.4 version of that, got even like a little bit smaller looking, but we packed more performance into it as well. We went to a chromoly material that we've been using in our hot metal irons. So the chromoly gives you even more kick out of it. You can make it a little bit more aggressive, a little bit thinner, so it goes hotter. We put more tungsten in it so it launches easier. And the cool stock part in this is it comes actually with a steel fiber hybrid shaft as well. A real deal steel fiber that, you know, you look at those, that shaft and a lot of different, you know, OEMs, that's a $60-$70 upcharge that comes stock in that. It's the 880 HLS. It's a great, great shaft, really good combo. And we've seen all the players who were, you know, converts to the 2.2 version have gone straight into the 2.4 version, no problem.
Really? So I have a little bit of a thing for chromoly, if you remember back my trip to down to HQ a few years ago.
Before you go that, I want to say we also added the lefty version of it too.
Which, oh, wow. Again,
I always take it in the shin from lefty. Yeah. So I just want to say we got it in lefty as well.
Say so that louder.
Chromoly.
No, yeah. So I remember hitting, I think that was the first iteration of chromoly in the Hot Metal Pro back in the day. That might've been 9.2.1. And just having Josh had way too much fun with his video when I was hitting chromoly. So the idea that you've incorporated is actually really exciting to me. But what surprises me is, so I've had issues with three woods, and I've used the utility irons to sort of band-aid my mediocrity with a metal wood in hands. And it's actually worked out really well because there's so much control on those heads, but there's also a level of forgiveness that exists from the broad heel portion, or sorry, the sole portion.
Yep.
And the hollow body is just a little bit bigger than that 2.25, so I have a chance of missing it a little bit and still surviving. But it's cool. So one of the things I'd love to talk about is, I just showed on the screen the picture of the new fly highs, which are this stunning black finish. You guys have flexed a little bit recently with a gorgeous set of Azalea irons, which I didn't see the 2.45 version, so you're clearly saving one of those for me for Christmas in the Azalea finish, which is great. But I get a sense you guys are having plenty of fun with finishes behind the scenes and taking chances, but also experimenting when you can. Are we going to see a little bit more of that sort of limited or custom finish option?
It's funny. That's one of those things where you don't only want to go to that well so many times. Like, to keep something limited, to keep something cool, there's a scarcity and unpredictability about it. So I'll say unpredictability, but you know, if you look at our last limited editions, we had the MP20s, we did a copper version, the 2.2.1s, we did a blue version, and the 2.4.1s, we did our Azalea edition. So we've had our last three blades have had a finish component to it. If anything, it drives just some coolness to it. The Azalea was something that when we kind of started playing around with the nano finish we were using on it, we saw something we had never seen before. We've seen people, some club makers and stuff, try to copy it a little bit, but no one's kind of hit the color palette that we hit, which I think is really cool. So that was a fun thing. You know, we've done some, I'd call it less limited edition, more just limited run, or like a little bit more in line with the 2.25. We did the black version of it. So we've started to play around with finishes more than we ever have. And again, I think that's something that comes with, you know, Mizuno's growing as a company. Like, we're all of a sudden accepted by so many more players. Our market share continues to grow. People are looking at us to be, you know, more than just the standard chrome finishes. So you potentially will see something coming up sometime next year. I'll say it's not at all what you're thinking it was going to be. It'll be completely different, something you haven't seen before. So we're excited about that. And then what's our answer to the Azalea is a highly debated thing right now, because the Azalea has been such a home run for Mizuno as a whole. Like, it was just from the very first time we showed it, like with the, I got the box right there. It's weird pointing the box right there. Which, what a fun project, like putting that together, working with BB&F on the ferrules, designing something you haven't seen before, working with Gulf Pride on a unique grip, working with True Temper on a unique dynamic gold tour issue shaft band. Every bit of that project was so much fun. And just knowing that you're building it around, you know, a certain tournament in April, it's like the most fun thing you can do. So I don't know how to quite answer that one, because I feel like we went for it all on that one.
Oh, so you mean the Masters is what you're saying?
I didn't say that.
It's so great being in my position. I could say pretty much whatever I want, and I'm fine. The Masters edition irons, yeah, they're gorgeous. Either way, stunning.
A really interesting thing about it is, you know, when that colorway first kind of leaked, it was at the end of the year last year. So end of 2023, late December, Mizuno Japan showed off a Masters edition. And where that kind of came from is Mizuno's long had a relationship with Augusta National, with the Masters, that is a Japan exclusive relationship. Japan, Mizuno has the exclusive right to utilize the Masters name and logo on certain categories, clubs being one of those categories in Japan. That's not something that we can do in the United States. So that's where, you know, it's our job then of how do you make your version as cool as the Masters version, if you can, because you're missing the coolest logo. Like, I mean, I don't think anyone would argue the Masters logo is the coolest, most aspirational logo in all of golf. Like, it just is. So how do we make something unique and different? And I think we did a really good job with the Azalea edition of tying it to that, but it not leaning on it's a Masters one. Like we had to make sure it wasn't just that. And that's where ours had the unique ferrule, ours had a different box, ours had different components. And it was the white colorway versus the traditional Masters yellow and red. Like the colorways were all different. And I think honestly, I think ours turned out a little bit better.
So one of the things I think is interesting, because you can say the spring major or the, you know, first tournament or whatever you want to call it, everyone knows what season opener, everyone right. knows what they're talking about, right? But
right.
one of the things to avoid doing, I think personally as a consumer, is I don't want to see something, if you take the badging off, it's not cool. So right. what I think was interesting about that release is compelling in both that it had shared likeness to that experience, but it also, had you released it and just called it Wicked New Limited Release Set of Untouchables, then everyone would still have the same kind of excited, like, man, that looks unbelievable type of release. And I think that was a huge, huge takeaway that I had on this one. And I assume you're going to continue to try and make sure that your releases are of that ilk. And I think just to tie it in with something else, you did some limited putter covers last year based on Omoe and the tie-in to the origins, I'm assuming the name, and they were stunning. And I think it seems to tie in every time that you're not just going to do something to do it. You put right. effort and thought into it to make sure that people are getting something truly interesting, not just limited.
Yeah, the putter covers was really fun project. Walker Slayton, who works really closely with me, who handles a lot of our putter development and working with the team for that and our putter direction. And that was something that he spearheaded and did a phenomenal job with. You know, the fall, spring, summer, winter, like the different versions, not necessarily tying it to, you know, everybody's got their majors, whatever. We wanted to do something different that spoke to our heritage, and it's the Japanese heritage, and all of them feature Osaka Castle on it. Osaka's the headquarters of Japan. And like when we go to a lot of global meetings over in Osaka, we'll sit, there's a cool restaurant that we've eaten at where you literally just overlook Osaka Castle. So it was so cool. And depending on where you're there, when you're there, the color palettes like of the sun setting behind it are so cool that it was something that when Walker had that idea, we were like, this is awesome. And the very first one was the spring that had the pops of pink. And I think it was almost the coolest of them, but then they got cooler. And you can actually see, if you have all four of them, you can see the progression of the seasons, but also the progression of the rising sun and setting sun throughout it. Like the story that's being told with those head covers, it's more than just we put out a head cover, buy it or don't buy it. Like we're trying to tie it into everything we do and put a lot of thought and effort and something just really aspirational about it. And each time we dropped one, it was like that, everybody wanted them, and it was really a fun project. So we hope to do some more cool things like that in the future as well.
I kind of did it to you today, Vosh. We talked about how Mizuno is kind of an iron company first for some people's mindsets, and I forced you to talk irons first. So that's
right.
It's sort of unfair on my end, but you know, I had the questions. It was a little bit selfish because a lot of interactions I've had lately have had to do with older versions of Mizuno iron. So I really wanted to get out there to force them to listen to this episode, not just for the click, but also so they'd actually put new product in their bag. But I want to give you an opportunity to talk about the ST line of drivers, yeah, or even just the Wood Series. We've had awesome feedback already on THP about it. It sounds really interesting. I haven't had a chance to hit them yet, but I've really enjoyed following along the progression that Mizuno's had in their metal woods. I've gamed them a number of times and really enjoyed them. I think all the way back to the last blue head you guys did, which was unbelievably cool. How has the ST release gone so far? Have they been positive?
It's been great. You know, it's an interesting one because this whole family is like, it's a step to get to where we're going with the woods. You know, if you've followed the ST story over the last couple generations, the ST project was really a tour driven and a Mizuno metal woods acceptance project of how do we reinvigorate our just everybody's vision of what a Mizuno wood is, what a Mizuno driver is, the performance level. How do we get our drivers to be thought of the same way our irons are thought of? So it's a monumental task and a big undertaking to try to get there. But I think we've gotten to a point where our metal woods are so good right now. And I'll say that it's taken a couple of generations to get to having the proper heads, like the mix of heads, to speak to all levels. Where, you know, when you look at our market share, again, putting my business hat on again, is from the market share side, do we need this many drivers? Maybe, maybe not. But from a fitting side, do we need this many drivers? The answer is yes, because there's so many different levels of playability in a driver. And just like I said, there's a lot of overlap on the irons to making sure you can tweak certain looks, feels, spins, launches, all those things. The driver world is very much the same. You know, it's no longer the world of the players play a small one, the high handicaps play a big one. You now see all levels of player, some of the best drivers in the world play bigger, higher spinning, more forgiving drivers because you can do so much in the fitting world with the adjustable sleeves, with shafts, all these different things. So now adding the ST Max to our lineup really rounds it out to give us a fitting option for all levels of player. We've got the STG, which is our super low spin, weight adjustable driver. We've got the STZ, which is a very neutral, if not slightly fade bias driver. The STX is a little bit more deeper face draw version than there. And then the ST Max is just our highest MOI straight hitting bomber. So to have those four options, four levers to pull in the fitting bay, gives you the opportunity to fit any level of player. And what's cool is we get play on tour from almost every one of these drivers. So it's not like the tour players are only looking at the 440cc one. We're building them up max fairway woods and hybrids. So like everybody's trying everything. And that's what I love about just the analytics of golf right now in terms of how do I gain the most strokes from tee to green? It might be in a club that fits in a different, call it player category, than you would think it would for a tour player. Like they could play a high MOI driver because they see that the 4 yards it cost them in overall distance gains them a certain level of, you know, accuracy, which ultimately leads to more strokes gained. So that's where it's so cool to like analyze all those things and have all these wood parts to speak to that. And they all share a very similar technology package. They've got increasing amounts of carbon depending on how much weight we had to move around. The Max has a ton of carbon on the crown, on the sole, to move mass around, a big old weight placed at the back to increase the moment of inertia. And then the Cortec chamber that lives throughout all of them helps us to lower that sweet spot, lower that spin, and get a higher core area, is what we like to call the amount of the face that lives in that super high COR zone. So just adding forgiveness, adding playability across the board.
Yeah, Cortec is a very stunning visual just looking at the driver. And it might be a good idea, Vosh, for you to break down it a little bit more and what exactly is going on with it and why it has propelled this product into what it's become.
For sure. Yeah, you're right. When I'm talking about the Cortec chamber, I'm talking about, if you're looking on the visual, it's what's on the leading edge on the sole side. If you aren't looking at this, if you're listening to it on a podcast, go check one out in the store. On the STG, it's in a gray color, but on the ZX and Max, it's in a bright blue color. What this is it's a TPU material with an embedded stainless steel weight that lives in that TPU that then is inserted into the sole of the golf club to allow a number of things to happen. First, by having that slit go all the way through into the head, we're getting a larger hinge. So you're getting a larger, basically, trampoline effect out of a larger percentage of the face, allowing that TPU material to compress and decompress to increase the ball speed, increase the core area. But then by embedding that stainless steel weight within that TPU, we're making sure that we're still keeping a very, very neutral spin rate within it. So we're not just shoving all the weight back so it's like, you know, super high spin, getting MOI at the expense of spin. We're still controlling spin while adding MOI in a different way. So it's a really fun and cool looking and striking visual that gives a golf club a ton of performance and a ton of ball speed. So you put us up against anybody and we are right there in terms of ball speed, if not winning a lot of our ball speed battles, which is really fun, especially from a company that people don't think of in terms of distance. They think of us in precision. They need to start thinking of us in distance as well.
So I pulled up STG again for those listening along. Just it's definitely a different look. There's a lot more going on in the head, which I think really speaks to the likelihood of this player wanting to manipulate the way the head enters the zone, maybe a little bit more focused on shaping than someone in the Max. But I can see that Cortec is very subtle. It's the colors changed a little bit. Do you do things like this to give them a slightly different look? Is the goal to really highlight Cortec for the folks who are playing the Max, and maybe just saying for the more discerning golfer, like, hey, it's there. We want you to know it's there, but we don't want to overpower you with the technology from a visual perspective.
Totally. Yeah, there are very subtle things done cosmetically where our goal is to let you know who it's for and what it's supposed to do without you ever reading any sort of marketing material, like just to understand by looking at the club. So yeah, you've got the G up right now, which the G is the smallest head. It's 440 cc, where all the others are 460, which again, when you're talking that 440 cc, that's going to speak to a little bit better player. It's smaller from toe to heel, smaller from front to back. And, you know, I talk about putting weight all the way back, like the Max has a massive weight in the back. Here you can literally see there's almost no weight in the back because this is designed to be ultra low spin. So when you're talking about those players who have tremendous head speed, who are looking for workability, who are looking for, you know, just max out, you know, knock the spin down, that tends to be a better player. And that's why I'd say we almost leaned more on, I don't want to call it blade cosmetic, but very simple cosmetic, clean cosmetic on this. On the Z, the X, and the Max, on the other hand, we highlighted a little bit more. We made it a bright blue. And another like subtle thing, again, these images probably won't show it, but if you look at the crown of every one of these, we actually kind of show a little bit of the trajectory intent on the crown as well. There's a very subtle decal that runs across the trailing edge of the entire head. On the Z, it's right in, there's a little highlight right in the middle. On the mat, on the X, the highlight lives on the heel side. On the Max, it's blue and straight back because it's designed to be a very straight hitting. And on the G, it's very understated. It's almost muted, almost blacked out. So all these little subtle things we do, we try to let you know what this club's going to do, even if you don't realize what we're trying to do. Like there's method to the cosmetic madness.
All these little technological Easter eggs you'll find on Mizuno drivers. I love that. I do have one question about it. I've played G a fair bit. You know me, I'm a high spin guy.
Yep.
And I hit it in the middle of the face every time. I wish I could say that means I hit in the fairway every time, but it's not. My flaws are elsewhere. But the low spin head's always been something I've leaned on. And when I allow at least from previous iterations, I've allowed folks to hit the driver, of course, just to see what it's all about. And fortunately, I at one point had, I think, the X in play as well, yep. So I could compare the two heads. But there are plenty of guys who went to hit it and it just, you know, drops out of the plane. It has very low spin out by design. Mm-hmm. And I want to challenge in this case, is there a fear as a manufacturer with going too far in each head in the lineup to avoid something where you let your playing partner hit it and it just really is truly a poorly fit product for them? And then you know, obviously separate yourself from that product because like, well, every Mizuno is going to be like that now because I just hit my friends and it fell out of the sky. So is there a fear of going too far with that?
A little bit. We hope that the fitting bay can neutralize some of that fear, but you're totally right. I totally get that concern. Like, I'm a player who, I love the look of the G. Like, at address, the G is phenomenal. But if I were just to put that club in play, people would be like, you don't drive the ball that good because it does not spin enough for me. Like, I'm a player who needs spin. You can make up some of that by having just adding loft to it, which, again, I was very tempted just to play a 10-5 G just to do that just because I like the look of it, but I didn't. So it's interesting right now just in the world of, like, I'll speak to the PGA Tour. You would think that the G would be the one that players would automatically gravitate towards because it is such low spin, they swing so hard. But it's amazing. I'd say the G is the one we have the least amount in play because it does spin so low. So it's a very, very, like, pigeonholed golf club, which there's a fear of, is that a good thing or not? But the positive in that is that a fitter who has experience with it can trust that club. Like, when a fitter knows, oh, I see you're a high spin player, I know right where to go for you. It's like an easy pull to that golf club. So I say we get in internal debates in terms of how low spin is too low spin. And we're getting to a point that I think we're close to that, to where now, even if those, like, super high spin players or high spin players are pulling that, it gets borderline low spin. But that's why the G also has adjustability to it, so that you have the G to be able to be that crazy low spin with the weights forward, but you can make it more playable and spin it in a more reasonable zone with those weights back. So there's give and take in everything. So you're right about that being a fear. And it's like, you don't want to push it too far, but you got to push it enough so that there's a clear difference and playability difference between each model.
So that's what I think is interesting, just as a, I wouldn't even say this is being just generally a consumer, but someone who has followed the process of manufacturing for so long now that we understood that there is a limit you can take it to. And we saw early on when we started the really chase low forward that it became quite problematic to get there. But I read comments and I see people say all the time, they make too many heads. They make, you know, too much of this. But the fact that there's such a level of differentiation between the heads validates why you'd want them, first of all. But it also says to me, I don't swing anything like, you know, if I played with 20 golfers, the chances of me swinging like two of them is probably pretty low. So the idea that there are heads built for each one of us is actually quite appealing to me. I think golfers couldn't be in a better place because of that. And I think this is a nice example of that, because if you make a product that someone can't hit, but I can, that tells me you're really thinking about me as a buyer, as a consumer.
Right. Well, that's why when a customer complains about too many options, I don't get that complaint. It's like, we want you to have the best one for you. If a retailer complains about too many options, I understand that more. They got to think about inventory levels and all that stuff. But that's why it's our job to encourage, again, I'll circle back to say, get to the custom fit cart. The point of the custom fit cart is, we know we have a lot of options. We know we have a lot of wood options, hybrid options, wedge options, iron options. We know that. let us take on that inventory risk and you go to that fitting cart. We don't want you to carry 8 billion of everything and then try to fit somebody into something that's on the shelf. We want to take that burden because we understand and we've done the research in terms of we have these four heads because we know this percentage will fit into this one, this percentage will fit into this one, this percentage will fit into that one. So let us take that burden off of you. So when someone complains about too many options, I don't get it. Like, more options, the better. Like, you know, if you said everybody has to drive this car, everyone would just complain. Like, I want options. I want to be personal. I want it to fit me. Let us take on that burden and make sure we have something that fits you as accurately as possible.
So I want to follow up on that comment about comparing consumers to retailers, because there's definitely a different need there between the two. But have you ever built products and thought, like, maybe we should just run this internally and make it a custom fit option or a fitter only option or a, you know, a website only option, and making it very clear what the product can do? Or has it always been our goal is to put our line in everywhere we can and make sure that golfers can all get a chance to hit it?
We are a company that, again, like, I think the proof is in the fitting. So what I'll say is that I'm trying to think if we've ever done a club that's just website only. We've never done that because we want a person to experience it and get it dialed in. We will, when we present to the retailers, when we present to PGA Tour Superstore, Golf Galaxy, Worldwide, like, you name all the big fitters, Club Champion, TruSpec, all of the great fitters that are out there, we will absolutely say, this is the mix we recommend you bringing in. Yeah, I'm going to show you a lot of different things. But I can count on it. I know the exact question that's coming from, you know, Justin at Superstore. Justin wants to know, tell me your percentage of these 19 different wedge heads in 5 different finishes. Let me know what I should buy. And I'm happy to say, all right, this is what you need to have on the shelf. But just make sure you have some demos back here so people can try them and go get custom fit. Because you're right. A million options, it's not good for retail because some of those options are for outliers. There's no doubt about that. So to then all of a sudden, stock a bunch of outliers in a retail channel, they're going to have to close them out. Then the next thing you see is you see wedges that are marked way down, which, again, to the customer might be all right, but then they might be encouraged to buy a spec that doesn't fit them because it's cheaper. Like, I would much rather them have healthy inventory that works, that's gonna move, that's gonna fit a lot of people. And then for those who are the outliers, fit cart all the way, because we will turn it around very quickly. We'll get it dialed in for you. And ultimately, like, the reason we wanna drive someone to a fit cart is because it's a bet. We know we're giving you the right club. If the fitter gets you dialed in and you have the right specs, your experience will be better. Even if that shaft is, very close on the wall, we don't want very close. We want exactly right. So we feel like our clubs are going to perform the best. You're going to get the most out of them. You're going to get the most enjoyment out of them if you get dialed in, and then we know it's right for you. That's going to how you're going to get the most out of the technology, how you're going to get the most out of the enjoyment of the game, all those things. Again, let Mizuno be the ones to say, come to us. We'll get you dialed in. We'll get it right, and we have an option for you.
Nice. As we wrap up the show, Vosh, obviously always appreciate you coming on and sharing your perspective from Mizuno. Is there anything you want to share about what's going on with you guys right now?
Other than we're just excited about everything, you're going to see some stuff from us in the next couple of months that will be very exciting. You're going to see some stuff early next year that's going to be really exciting as well. And I'll say that perceptions that you have of Mizuno, I think, will change very, very quickly. Those players, we've talked a lot about Mizuno irons. You're going to start recognizing us in more categories as well and start seeing some really cool stuff coming from us, some stuff you've never seen before. So I'm so excited about what is just over the horizon. So, like, our next chat is going to be even more exciting than this one, because there's I can't wait to tell some stories that they started in a fitting cart and have worked their way into reality. Like, okay. We're always looking for things of how we can optimize that fitting cart, how we can optimize what you get out of the club. And we've got some things that are overcoming some barriers that we've never seen people overcome. So wow. It's going to be just an exciting little bit.
Okay. Well, let's try not to wait so long to have you on again. Obviously, everyone enjoys your time. Do you have any questions for me today?
Yeah, talk to me about your world of golf right now. Like, what are you seeing in terms of, let's talk about woods in particular. Like, the wood market is so interesting with so many different products out there, so many different people telling different stories. I want your state of the industry. I'd love to hear it from you.
Really?
Yes.
Full bore? Well, I don't really want to speak from the industry in total. I'd love to speak about the folks that I play with and the perspectives that they've had. What I've found really fascinating is everyone seems to have a really personal identity with fairway woods. And I say that because hybrids and utilities have come along and really disrupted that wood category. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there are a number of guys I know who go 3-wood and they trust it wholly. And then after that, it's either a hybrid or a utility, and there's no arguments as to what should mm-hmm. come next. I also have guys who play 4 or 5 different woods in their bag because they're so fond of these products and they just really anchor into the technology that exists mm-hmm. there. So it seems to be that the fairway wood category is almost being, I don't want to say left in the dust, but like challenged so aggressively from different avenues that yeah. there really needs to be a tech benefit or a very serious benefit to get it in the bag.
Right. What I love about the fairway woods of today is that you used to know what a 5-wood, what a 7-wood did. Now you can get a 5-wood that launches high with no spin. You can get a 5-wood that spins and gets the ball in the air easier. Again, there's so many options in the fairway wood world that I think a lot of players who are locked into, after my 3-wood, I can't do another wood, need to revisit it. Like when you look at Dustin Johnson playing a 7-wood or a 9-wood yeah. or something. Keith Mitchell, one of the longest hitters, you know, a Mizuno staffer, one of the longest hitters on the planet, he plays a 4-wood and a 7-wood. Like, it's that end of the bag is so interesting because there's so many different options up there. And just talk 19 degrees of loft. There are so many different ways to play with 19 degrees of loft. There are 4 irons that have it. There are 5 irons that have it. There are 2 irons that have it. There are hybrids, big and small. There are fairway woods, big and small, that spin a lot and spin a little. Like that, those numbers of loft right there are so interesting that for people to like really dig into that transition area in their bag between the 3-wood and call it a 6-iron, there's countless options in there that could work for people.
I would say it's so fascinating when you ask each individual, why is this product in your bag? And I'll mm-hmm. compare it just to, again, playing partners. I've got a good friend who has had a 5-wood in his bag for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years now. And he is so deeply invested in that product. He will not hit another thing there. He's tried it and it always ends up back in the bag. But to his credit, it's also the best product or best club in his bag 99% of the time. So right. Here's the funny part about that. He's never tried that club in a 3-wood. He's uh-huh. never considered that product in a driver or that company in a driver. It's that one particular product in a 5-wood yeah. that simply works for him. It's like it comes with a mind of its own, and there's like right. this end game that exists there. If you have a 3-wood that you love, you're not going to go and hit that 5-wood because you love the 3-wood, not the 5-wood. That's like the right. mindset that goes on. It, you get to that 5-wood spot, it's like, well, that's where my hybrid goes. Like, uh-huh. does it? Because why?
Right.
So, yeah, I think that's sort of untapped. I feel like we've gone so far away from woods that mm-hmm. we need to come back to it a little bit as yeah. maybe the, not necessarily industry, but perspective. It's paralysis by overanalysis, right?
Well, it's so funny, like, when you look at the mix that players have on the wood side of the world, we've seen a trend on a particular lot of our European Tour players. We've seen a number of them play STG in their driver, which is the super low spin, ST Max in their fairways, which is the big and the high spin. And then I look at myself. I play ST Max in my driver, the biggest, highest spinning. I play STG in my 3-wood and 5-wood, the smallest, lowest spinning. So there's different like combinations for different people, which is really interesting. And it's all because what are you trying to do in that part of your bag? So it's a fascinating thing. And there are so many levers to pull. That's what I love about it. And that's what I love about like developing different options and being like, did you think about that club in this way? Like there's different things you can unlock.
So it might be a really fun thread to start on THP. We usually have a call to action. This show will have a thread on THP where we'll discuss the conversation today. Cool. But it might merit its own discussion in itself. Is what is an 18 degree club in your bag? And why?
And why is the big one? Exactly.
Yeah,
right.
I might kick that off before the show goes live, so people are wondering, you know, why it went. But Vosh, man, it's always so awesome to have you on the show. You always bring the heat. I'm super excited about the Mizuno trajectory, especially the Metalwoods, man. You guys work so hard for that. It's nice to see it paying off a little bit. So
cool. I appreciate it. It's always a fun conversation with you. I love chatting with you and chatting gear and kind of nerding out on it. And yeah. I love it you ask me to go nerdier, which is good. Usually I'm trying to dial it back to nerd, which
no,
is hard.
No, never.
For me.
Never, never, never. Hey, if you folks are out there playing golf this weekend, have a great time. If you have Mizuno irons in there that are older than your children are, please go get fit, put a new set in the bag. I promise they're very interesting. Potentially some new JPX this year. We couldn't quite dig it out of them, but I feel really good about the opportunity to see some new product at the end of this year. So we'll see. But either way, have a great time. Make it count. And we'll see you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.